Okay. I believe we're back and ready to take up item 14, which is our update on Salmon Creek Watershed Habitat Rehabilitation.
And Lisa Hewlett, who used to work for us when she was a child and has moved on to work for the RCD, is leading a group of folks. And Lisa asked if she could come give a presentation on the work they've been doing on Salmon Creek, which I have to tell you is pretty awesome. So she's got some cohorts with her. She's got John Green and Lisa Pruneski, thank you. And Joe, you got another hard name. So I'm glad I could do that introduction so well. but I would like to welcome them and thank them for coming back after lunch. And I know we're really looking forward to hearing what you've got to say. So come on up.
Yeah, we feel better. There's only four. So we're feeling more comfortable. I can relax for this.
Yeah, this should be enjoyable.
Put your guard down.
They're little, but they're mighty. we could definitely fill the table with the number of people that are involved in this project.
And now presentations of six.
Well, thank you for giving us the opportunity to talk about the presentation. So as Kat said, my name is Lisa Hewlett. I'm the executive director with the Gold Ridge Resource Conservation District. And the Gold Ridge Conservation District is bordered by the Russian River to the north, the Estero Americano to the south, the Laguna de Santa Rosa to the east, out to the coast. So we are one of three resource conservation districts in Sonoma County. And the project we're going to talk about today is the Save Our Salmon, the Salmon Creek Habitat Rehabilitation Program that was funded from the NOAA Restoration Center through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. And I'm going to turn the presentation over to the two people who worked on the project most. There's John Green, the lead scientist with the Gold Ridge Resource Conservation District, and Liza Pruneski with Pruneski Chatham Incorporated, who did most of the planning and construction activities for the project. And then we also have Joe Petritz for the NOAA Restoration Center to talk about how the type of project you're going to be hearing about is so important for salmonid recovery up and down the North Coast. So with that, I'll let John Green take it away. Thank you.
Thanks. And I know we're going to see some good slides, so can we get some of the lights down a little bit? Great. Thanks, Kat.
Does this work?
Oh, good. Yeah, that worked.
Oh. Can you guys see?
You have your.
That's fine.
I think we're going to have to use this.
Yeah.
So this one makes it go forward.
I think so.
We'll find out.
Hey. Like Lisa said, my name is John Green. I'm the lead scientist with the Gold Ridge RCD, and I was the project manager for the Save Our Salmon, Salmon Creek Habitat Rehabilitation Program. Since Lisa already talked about the district, I'll move on to the next slide. Salmon Creek is a coastal watershed, and it's relatively lightly developed. But because of past or historical land uses and changes in land use patterns over the last maybe 150 years, the fish habitat in the creek has been degraded. And that includes both physical habitat and water flows, which I'll be talking about. Coho salmon were extirpated in the mid-90s from Salmon Creek. There are still steelhead, and coho have been reintroduced by Department of Fish and Game over the last three winters. So the work that we're doing is actually hopefully going to have a direct impact on the new populations. Groundwater resources in the watershed are pretty limited, so human and agricultural needs are mostly satisfied by either direct pumping from the streams or shallow near-stream wells. So most of the human and ag needs in the watershed have a pretty direct impact on the stream. So one of the most important factors that's going to influence and has been influencing the survival of salmon in the watershed is just the availability of water in the stream, and particularly in the summer during the low flow periods. So the program, we really tried to approach the issue of habitat degradation and flow on a number of different fronts. And we focused on a couple of key reaches that were most impacted, particularly in terms of water withdrawals. So the program had several different approaches. The first was to try to rehabilitate the stream corridor by revegetating the riparian areas, both to provide shade and cover for fish populations, but also to provide a future source of large wood to improve the habitat complexity. The second approach was to deal with habitat complexity on the short and medium term by implementing some large wood projects in the stream to improve the complexity and provide more different types of habitats. Third was erosion prevention in upslope areas to address excess fine sediment that's getting into the stream. And then the fourth approach, which I'm going to be talking about in more detail in a minute, was to try to augment stream flow by essentially adjusting the timing of collection of water for human and agricultural needs. And I'll talk in more detail about that in a minute. We also have a pretty robust monitoring program that Liza is going to go into in a lot more detail than I will. And then there was an outreach and education portion of the program as well to try to raise awareness. And although awareness in Salmon Creek is pretty high right now of the fish issues. So in terms of stream flow augmentation, I can see this is the presentation that I didn't edit. In terms of stream flow augmentation, the primary goal was to restore summer flows. In some of the areas where the withdrawals are concentrated, especially in drought years, the stream goes completely dry. So no matter how much habitat rehabilitation work you do, if there's no water, you're really just wasting your time. A secondary goal, or maybe a corollary goal to that, was to provide a more secure water supply for the residents and the agricultural operations in the basin. I think everybody in that watershed is kind of painfully aware of the fact that their water is a bit tenuous. And we worked really closely with both the Bodega Water Company, which is a small mutual benefit company with between 35 and 40 hookups, and also with the Bodega Volunteer Fire Department, which the photos are of, in supplying both the BWC members and the fire department with an alternative water source, which in this case is rainfall off their roofs. So the methods, like I was talking about, one of them was just off-channel storage, surface storage. The main project we did there was rehabilitating an agricultural site that had been largely silted in and had diminished capacity that collects water just from sheet flow and unconcentrated surface flow. But the primary method that we used was rainfall catchment off roofs and other impervious surfaces. So we had two approaches within the rainfall catchment part of the program. The first was to provide smaller scale rainwater catchment systems for residential use. And we focused on non-potable supply. And our goal was to provide enough water to cover the increased use during the summer. So use that we're assuming is mainly going to go towards irrigation of gardens and things like that, watering animals. We didn't want to get involved with potable supply just because of the higher requirements for treatment and that sort of thing. We integrated all of this with conservation measures so that we could be sure that the water that we were catching off roofs wasn't just going to be wasted down the line. And like I said, we were focused on residents who were either drawing directly from the creek or were Bodega Water Company customers, in which case they were drawing from a shallow well right next to the creek, or were both. So, and then the basic approach here is that you collect rainwater during the winter and then you store it, and it's available for use during the summer when you want to reduce the amount that's being drawn from the stream. The second approach for stream flow augmentation was an agricultural system that we installed, a 230,000-gallon system to provide all the summer water necessary for a dairy cow replacement operation from the months of May through October every year. So this was kind of an innovative design, and I think Liza will talk a little bit more about it in a minute. It was designed and built by Pronesky Chatham. An underground tank, and the primary collection area was the roof of the big barn in the background there in the lower photo, as well as a couple of smaller ag building roofs. And this will eliminate the withdrawal from a well that essentially is directly in the stream bed from the months of May through October every year. And I should say that all these systems were designed and sized such that even in a drought year, they're going to provide the targeted amount of water that we designed them for. So we were essentially designing for drought conditions. So with all of these systems, we anticipate that over 500,000 gallons of water every year will not be drawn from Salmon Creek during the summer months. And like I said earlier, we think that this is going to help the residents and the ag operators in the Bodega Valley to have a more secure and stable water supply, not quite so subject to the whims of the weather. We learned a lot of lessons in implementing this program because it was a stimulus grant. We had a really short time to get all this work done, and there was a lot of work that went into it. But one of the most important ones is that there is actually a lot of interest out there in replacing extractive water sources. And I think that interest is heightened in the Bodega Valley because it is so closely tied to the creek. But a lot of people were really interested in being able to catch water off their roofs and use it for both non-potable and potable purposes. A second lesson was that this type of rainwater catchment for residential use is really feasible. It's very appropriate. It's feasible, and the technical obstacles to it are not that difficult. In terms of cost effectiveness, we installed all these systems for somewhere between about $1.50 and $2.50 per gallon of water stored each year. It's not really a huge cost when you consider that almost all of our systems were under 20,000 gallons. The biggest ones that we installed for residential use were 40,000 gallons. Large-scale catchment, the type that we did on this dairy cow operation, is also feasible in certain situations. Probably the biggest limiting factor here, besides cost, which still came in at around $2 a gallon, but just because of the size, you know, the dollar amount was much larger. The biggest limiting factor here is just having a suitable catchment area where you can collect enough water for a particular operation. We believe that off-channel surface storage is feasible, but because of water rights and water quality considerations, it's going to be a more complex type of approach. Particularly when you consider that if you're collecting water in the winter to use in the summer, any kind of extraction, you're going to run into limitations on riparian and appropriative water rights. So we tried to stay away from water rights issues completely. We believe that addressing the timing of water use or the timing of water collection is going to be really effective in terms of restoring the habitat, the flows in the habitat. And then one of the things that I added to this presentation that didn't make it into this one was that the process that we went through in developing agreements between the RCD and the Bodega Water Company and the residents and ag operators in the valley was really an eye-opener for us. My other slide says planning is critical, which is kind of a no-brainer, but we really were... there were really a lot of issues that were brought up that we hadn't anticipated. And probably the most important one for me to mention is that there was a lot of concern on the part of landowners in that accepting federal government funding to improve their property would cause them to be assessed for property taxes for the improvements. And because they already had a water supply, even though it was less stable, there was a lot of concern and maybe reluctance to do that if they were going to end up paying for the improvements one way or the other. We were pretty proactive about addressing that and went and talked with the assessor in Sonoma County and got an agreement with them that because we weren't actually giving them a new water supply, we were just giving them a way of storing water that in essence they would be drawing anyway, that they wouldn't be subject to a property tax assessment. So I think that was one of the real successes of this program. And then finally, and maybe Joe will talk a little bit about this, funding is available. I think NOAA is really interested in continuing to fund this type of program in other watersheds where water flow is really limited. And for us in the Gold Ridge District, we're looking particularly at Green Valley, which, you know, I think as everyone knows, in drought years, large sections of Green Valley dry up. And if we can do something to replace some of the extractive pressures on that stream, I think we'll have some success in reintroducing or encouraging the reintroduction of fish populations. So, and I know that NOAA has expressed interest in continuing to fund this type of program, if we are successful in implementing the SOS program, which I think we've been pretty successful. So with that, I'll let Liza take over and talk about the science and the planning efforts.
Are there any questions in between before we
can? Can I ask a quick question? So, John, how much total storage aggregate did you accomplish?
About 500,000 gallons.
And were you able to measure a stream gauge difference during summer months?
Well, that's something that we're hoping to do. We just finished the installation of all these systems on December 30th, 2 days before our funding ran out.
Oh, wow. Under the tag.
Down to the wire.
But Liza will talk a little bit more about this. Part of the effort on NOAA's part, or part of the requirements that they wanted to see, was that we have a pretty robust monitoring program.
Sure.
Now, there are a lot of variables that go into what streamflow is going to do every year. And if you look at this in the context of the total water supply for the basin or the total rainfall for the basin, it really is a drop in the bucket. But because of the timing of the demand on the stream, because the heightened use is in the summer, we think that we're going to be able to, over the long term, measure a real measurable benefit to the stream. That's going to play out over the next probably 10 years.
And something like Bodega Water District out there too. Are they limited on the number of connections as by agreement to any of this?
I think they're limited actually by the state board. They have a well that they get most of their water from that is problematic in terms of how much they draw and when they can draw it. And so part of this program, part of their cooperation on this, is that they can now show progress towards getting themselves off that one well.
They're more sustainable as a reason.
Exactly, much right. More sustainable. It really is a tenuous situation out there with regards to water supply.
Yeah, I think that goes for a lot of the communities going all the way north up through, particularly those around in Mendocino. I've worked on a couple of streams around Elk and Manchester that have the same type of issue with they are having trouble supplying for their communities. So,
and it seems intuitive, water comes from the sky and it's
right.
Free if you can catch it.
Well, so. And particularly with what you get for rainfall on the coast, this seems like a model opportunity. I don't want to jump ahead here. I'll let you finish your presentation,
yeah, no,
but I think I'm kind of already getting to the punchline here. So,
My name is Liza Pernusky, and I am a president of a small environmental company based here in Sonoma County, and we do planning, design, and construction work for restoration projects. And we've been working with Goldridge RCD for many years. And I want to reiterate that this is a true community project. It's really been driven and founded by the landowners, the residents of the watershed, and greatly supported by Goldridge RCD, the Occidental Arts and Ecology Center, many agencies, including your own. One of the earliest drivers, here's a timeline. We've been at this, it seems, forever. But one of the earliest drivers was that loss of the coho in 96, and watershed residents began to get together and say, what's happening and what can we do about it? And I think very early on, if I recall, we started thinking about using Prop 13 money, so that kind of dates us. And then Fish and Game came in and did habitat assessment work and began working with Goldridge RCD to assess what, at that time were considered big drivers, sediment sources, riparian habitat, water quality. And then we began working with Occidental Arts and Ecology Center and the Coastal Conservancy and the Salmon Creek Watershed Council to look at the estuary and find out what was going on there for fish. All along, at one point, we wanted to have a grand unified plan, and Lisa applied for funding for one of the
Salmon Creek Integrated
Watershed Plan, which got delayed a bit by the bond freeze, but it was finally completed this last spring. The estuary, as you know, is just north of Bodega Bay, a beautiful landscape that's changed quite a bit historically. We did some research in it, finished this plan study in 2006, and this really was the foundation for the beginning of looking at water and its impact on the quantity of water and its impact on the fish populations. A key finding from this study was that low summer flows were resulting both in a delay of the opening of the bar and in very reduced water quality conditions for the fish in there. We had low dissolved oxygen, high temperatures, salinity issues. And we would see a whole bunch of young fish, juveniles, steelhead at that time, in the beginning of the summer, and by the end of the summer, they would be completely gone. Although there's no incorporated areas in this watershed, a number of small communities use water, and mostly it's from near shallow gallery walls right adjacent to the stream. And these include Bodega Bay, Bodega, and Freestone. And we were able to show in this study that there really was a correlation between those near channel wells and what was happening in the surface water. So you can see, you know, in a drought year, in the high flow years, it's not that big of a deal, no big problem. But in the drought years, when they're pumping, the pools were going dry. And of course, you know, not only is there less freshwater flow in the drought years, but the demand picks up, the consumer demand picks up. So the next phase of the work, Coastal Conservancy then funded a water conservation plan, and the town of Bodega Bay, or community of Bodega Bay, did take very seriously all this work and other issues they were having with fish habitat, and is working hard on implementing ways to stop their summertime withdrawals from Salmon Creek. So we focused our energy upstream primarily. A very important upstream area was this, what we called the Bodega Reach, in and above, upstream of the town of Bodega. And this was critical not only because Bodega's wells, their supply wells, were right there, but also the Fish and Game work had identified this area of the stream as being one of the most important rearing areas. So we had this unfortunate confluence of drying pools and good fish habitat. And you can see how the same site, all these great sites are shady, which is unfortunate for photograph purposes, but you can see that it does dry out. We also, in this water conservation plan, looked at the whole watershed and mapped it based on average water use per parcel. And we worked with Virginia Porter, who was in your room earlier, on this piece of it. And this has been a great exercise for many reasons. One, it helps us target where there's that confluence of fish use and water use that we need to work on. But also in terms of the community, it's a great tool because we started seeing things like that big purple chunk, for example, is the rural residential use. And you can see down in the bottom, they have by far the greater share of, you know, water demand. And in a watershed where people are struggling with what's happening and why is it happening and fingers are getting pointed, this is really helpful information. And it's not only that many of the rural residential users, you know, maybe won't point as many fingers, but it also really gives them an opportunity to do something and to help out and to take actions themselves that can make a difference. So that's been really a side effect of this work. The other important one to look at is the agriculture, the grazing-based agriculture use, which uses a much smaller proportion of water than they have the landscape, but it's relatively easy to target. Many of them have riparian rights, so they're withdrawing right from the creek, and Goldridge RCD has a great historic working relationship with them, so it's an easy place to get some work done. We looked at known diversions in the Salmon Creek watershed, and this is what John was talking about. We put it all together and started analyzing how much water is used when within the year. And as those of us who live in West County know well, shortage of rain is not the issue. We get a lot of rain. So it just, as you can see, the demand increases in the summer. And if we can store that winter, some of that extra winter flow, it'll help out. They're very, as John said, a very key partner in all this has been the Bodega Water Company, which is small, as you said. There's probably many others like it up and down the coast. Volunteer run, a lot of big issues and small resources with which to tackle them. Another part of this conservation planning effort was really to work with them to look at their storage issues and to look at their efficiency. One of the things we found in this process is that they were losing about 40% of their water in leaks. And they immediately addressed that and got that down to about 25% quickly. So I think that's our most cost-effective way to save water. So when the ARRA funding announcement came out from NOAA, we put our heads together and said, okay, we've got all this information about what's going on and why it's going on. What can we do pretty quickly without a lot of, you know, regulatory slowdowns? What can we put together? And so, you know, this is what we did. We worked with Bodega Water Company to, as John said, reduce their shallow gallery well, that orange dot right there in the middle of the screen. And the small blue dots are the individual components where there is roof water harvesting systems. We worked, as I said, with their upgrades to the system to reduce leakage. There's some rural residential sites where we're actually able to work with owners to remove riparian pumps. And then this is the big ag operation, which is, as you can see, the yellow circle there, very close to the same reach where the little fish are and where the town of Bodega gets its water. One of the key things here is that we are trying to focus all these water capture, rainwater capture efforts in a small area so we can see a difference. I think if they were spread out throughout the watershed, it would be harder to monitor that difference. So then the monitoring was quite challenging to figure out. I mean, some of the things are simple because they're immediate and some are very long term. But we worked hard, John, Lauren Hammock on my staff, Joe here, on coming up with some meaningful ways to monitor. And basically our goal was to move the habitat from what the Coho Recovery Plan says is poor towards good conditions. And we are, the monitoring included not only the stream flow, but all the pieces, the riparian work, the in-stream habitat structure, and a little bit of fine sediment work that was also done. So for the riparian buffer, it's pretty straightforward, easy monitoring with plants. And really, we're looking for long-term resilience. We're looking for wider buffers that can ultimately replace the large wood naturally, that can, you know, with species diversity, that can even adapt if, as we see climate change impacts and other changes in flow that can still maintain a healthy riparian buffer. This is an optical illusion. I have to explain that Doug Gore, who's doing that work, is not directly under his bucket. It's quite a ways behind him. But the in-stream habitat structures, he was actually on a lunch break and sitting there thinking about how he's going to get that log in the creek. But we're looking at increasing pool depth, at increasing the diversity of habitat, in-stream habitat, and just providing a variety of different kinds of protection and shelter for young fish. We're also looking at just increasing pool frequency so we get closer to a target of 40 to 50% in this reach. The stream flow is the trickiest to monitor. Some things are really easy, like the number of pumps removed. The small tanks that were part of the Bodega Water Company system, that's metered. So we get a really good read. We'll be able to see this summer what their reduction in summertime use is. And then we're also going to be measuring, we're going to be doing stream, a lot of different gauges and profiles to measure an increasing trend in the number of weeks where the pool mean weekly average temperature is at or below 15 degrees centigrade, so we want cooler water. We're going to be measuring oxygen so we get hopefully greater oxygen, and then doing visual surveys to see if we can get longer number of days when the riffles and the pools are connected. The fine sediment is pretty straightforward. We're just monitoring for implementation to make sure that that delivery of fines is stopped. And then really our ultimate goal is that we get healthier and more juvenile fish produced from this system. So we will also be doing snorkel surveys in pools and looking at how many fish there are, what condition they're in, and how they're using the new and improved stream. Thank you, and I think we're all open for questions.
I just had one question on the coho. A lot of the studies are showing they migrate pretty quickly, and sometimes all the way down to the mouth in a very unimpressive marsh, wetland, small stream. They actually will go when the river's dry. Have you looked at that area, both for juvenile coho and then preservation? And I couldn't tell from your maps how built up it was and some other things, but I did want to say at least some other places they found that, much to the surprise of people.
That's next on the list, I think.
Okay.
It's a very exciting area. A lot of it is state park right in there, actually.
Oh, good. Well, that's a good
and
start.
And unfortunately, Highway 1 has been a major barrier there for sediment transport and, you know, the resultant off-channel habitat. So there's some big issues with Caltrans, and there's work to be done there, but I think there's great potential.
Yeah, and some of the latest studies that have been coming out, mostly down around Scott Creek in Santa Cruz County, is showing that steelhead and coho, in their life history, they really need that estuary to be still connected to the stream, because the latest research is coming out is showing them that they come down and use the estuary for the beginning of the summertime and benefit and grow at a much greater rate than the fish that stay in the little tributaries. But one of the biggest problems of Highway 1 and closing off these estuaries and reduced stream flows is that what we found through those studies that the fish are actually need to go back up into the stream and back into those tributaries and will actually become a greater concentration of the adults that return, and sometimes 40-50% more of those fish that use the estuary will be the ones that contribute to the adult returning populations. And so you can see how a lot of the streams down south of here past the Golden Gate, and then also a lot of streams north too that don't have natural functioning estuaries and stream flow that's cut off, don't have are seeing the fish disappear and stuff too. So
can I ask what else, what do you've done this so far? I assume it's a work in progress, so what else would you do given no constraints? Dream big. What else is planned, and what else is out there possibility in a watershed like this?
Well, I'll go first a little bit, and I'll let Lisa finish up with future projects. But one of the things we knew, we funded this for about, I think, $1.6 million, which is one of the smallest era projects that was funded. But it was definitely one of the most unique projects. And we really envisioned this as envisioned funding this project is just a start. We knew that $1.6 million was not going to solve the problems in Salmon Creek, but it would take care of a lot of all the meetings we hashing out with Bodega Water Companies on landowner agreements and doing all that. And just getting these water projects started is extremely difficult because there's so many different types of users in the system and water rights and perceived, what's the federal government going to come after us or, you know, things that legalities involved and so we had really hoped that this would just be the start here and getting this up and running, and we intend to use this as a pilot project up and down the coast to showcase this at fisheries conferences and stuff to really get more efforts. And we're actually working with Trout Unlimited to identify more monies available for this type of stuff as a fish project and ways to solve what really isn't amount of water problem, but it's a water storage problem. Because just like a Mendocino Coast, people are struggling to get water, but there's a ton of rain, you know, so figuring out a water storage problem. So I'll let Lisa talk about future projects come from this.
So I think what we'd all like to see is that this project is expanded up and down the North Coast within the boundaries or the jurisdiction of the Gold Ridge Resource Conservation District. You know, we'd like to see it, you know, expanded to some of our other watersheds, especially maybe Valley Ford and the Estero Americano, where some of the ranchers are having some water problems. But also one of the main components of this program that we're hoping is a next step is to get more water storage capacity for the Bodega Water Company so they are no longer reliant on that in-stream or that near-channel well. So we are right now working on a design and funding to get 1 million gallons of storage that they can, so they don't need to use that well. So that's like a next step there. And then also using the approaches that we took in this project, which was to look at all the different aspects of what the stream needs, what's limiting, you know, fine sediment, large wood, stream flow, augmentation as restoration, not as mitigation, and expanding it throughout Salmon Creek. And I'm sure, as Joe said and as Liza said, other communities up and down the North Coast and, you know, probably, you know, south of us could benefit from this, the lessons learned.
I want to say, too, I think there's great potential for doing even a small cost share. We turned people, a lot of people down. There were a lot more people who wanted these tanks than were able to get them. And a lot of people are willing to contribute a fair amount to having a tank. But to having, there's peculiarities about the designing the systems at every single site we did. And so that kind of help and some program that would really allow this to expand in other key tributaries of the watershed and in the Bodega Reach, I think, too, would be great.
You've probably got about a handful of different case studies for different type of tank installations that the RCD can put a pamphlet together for. So,
yes. And the community relationship part, of course. Which will have its own pamphlet.
Yeah, one of the main benefits, I think what Noah was looking for is that showing that, you know, us as, and I'm not from the regulatory division, but showing that Noah can work with agricultural interests and we, you know, the fish community and the agricultural community can live side by side in this. So.
Well, one thing along those lines I was going to ask is that I noticed our open space district, and I don't live too far from this whole valley right here, and I love driving out through there, and it's really pastoral. It's beautiful out there, and our open space district at one time had talked about kind of targeting properties that had for acquisition and preservation that had for open space that would have a watershed enhancement, either groundwater recharge or, and there were people trying to get them to go to that way. Because I noticed like Freestone has, you know, it's kind of considered in that Pinot Noir belt, you know, and you kind of see that creeping in out there a bit and more towards Occidental for sure. But at the same time, you know, this kind of work is great, it's right in stream, but at the same time, you know, land base, and that's why I asked about Bodega, you know, as far as connections go, and it would somewhat defeat the purpose if they just doubled their number of connections and everybody used half the water, right? And I mean, but at the same time, to protect that watershed as far as to keep it what it is, so that investment pays dividends long term and that it just keeps on going.
One important thing to know is that the site where that large agricultural installation occurred is protected by an open space easement.
Is that Perucci's dairy?
Gilardi.
Where?
And so if as you're driving from Bodega to Occidental, right on the west eastern edge of town, it's to the south.
Okay.
Can't see it right from town, but it's there.
As someone who's a bit older than the others, on behalf of those of us who were residents of the state of California who used to enjoy an immense amount of steelhead and salmon fishing, particularly on Salmon Creek, about 40 to 50 years ago when I was just a little bit younger, Salmon Creek was the next option after the Russian River began to get muddy. You went to Salmon Creek because it was always available and it would clear very, very quickly. And there are lots and lots and lots of streams, particularly as you get up towards the Garcia, which we have worked with extensively, but there are a number of little streams up there which have not big estuaries like Salmon Creek, but others that are up there that would be just ideal for this kind of stuff. And I think it's almost all agricultural land that would easily be tamed. And they have been wiped out mostly by not... people who didn't understand what they were doing agriculturally, but it has been, I'm thinking particularly of things like Brush Creek, Alder Creek, those that are, that would just be, you know, from a fisherman's perspective, the moment the big ones start getting knocked out with mud, you go there. And Salmon Creek, I can remember in the 60s and 70s, it was just prime for steelhead particularly. So thank you very, very much.
Well, thank you.
In regards to the Bodega Water Company, did they already have a the water that's collected from rainwater, does it have to go through an additional type of purification before it's sent to their customers, or does it just go through their already established filter or purification system?
Well, the systems that we put in are not, they're not actually going into the Bodega Water Company system. They're decentralized, so one system would just serve the outdoor non-potable needs for one residence. But the Bodega Water Company has actually expressed interest in doing this on a larger scale and then putting it through their filtration system.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I ask one last question? Down towards my son was at a beach, or one of those beach houses down by the estuary last weekend for a birthday party, and there's a whole little kind of community down there. And where do they get their water down there? Is that a mutual supply system as well? It's kind of all funky down there. It's cool funky, but
yeah,
it's funky.
Yeah, it is.
Rooftop now.
Yeah.
I mean, that might.
Yes to all.
I mean, that's way down at the end of the watershed, but.
Yeah, and that is definitely working with that community. Salmon Creek, it's called, is definitely, I think, something else that we can do. And they've got other water quality issues, too, right there.
I could imagine.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to say thank you. I think it's fabulous. This whole project is fabulous, and congratulations to all you for making it happen under the stimulus money.
Are you going to present at SRF?
Yes.
Great.
And last year there was a whole panel too, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. There's going to be a workshop this year on rainwater collection. I'll be presenting at that.
Great.
Yeah, this work is also, and along with work that's being done in the Mentol, stream flow augmentation and tanks for in the Mentol system, it's going to be presented at the Soils and Water Conservation Conference, National Conference in Washington, D.C., and we have some of our headquarters folks doing that. It'll also be presented at the American Fisheries Society meeting, annual meeting in Seattle. So it'll actually be the largest meeting of AFS that's to date. So
great.
But, yeah.
Good work.
And as monitoring results come over the next 15 years, which is the length of the landowner agreements, more and more presentations and more things will be learned about.
Yeah, particularly interested in seeing how your change in summer base flows. I mean, this is obviously your first year. You're going to try to quantify that, and depending on the water type that you get, it's going to see if you get a measurable difference or not. But a couple of years, you should really be able to see something. So that'll be, look forward to seeing something like that. If you want to come back, it'd be great.
And we really look forward to phase two, phase three, and however maximizing we can in the Salmon Creek watershed. So
thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.